everyone. Thanks for joining us for the latest in our Broadstone broadcast series. I'm Brett Hill, Head of Health and Protection, and I'm joined today by my colleague Emily Jones, Client Consulting Director. Good morning, Emily.
Morning.
For today's episode, we want to spend some time talking about the subject of employee healthcare benefits, and in particular, talking about health trusts. Now, we've seen strong growth in private healthcare since the pandemic as families and businesses alike respond to growing waiting lists for treatment on the NHS. But the health trust market was growing long before the pandemic even started. So, what are they and why are they becoming more common? Well, Broadstone recently released a report on the subject of health trusts, our client guide to establishing a health trust. And I'm delighted to say we're joined today by the author of that report, our very own Sharon Harwood-Davis. Sharon, welcome to the broadcast.
Morning.
So I guess to kick us off, and for those of our listeners who don't know, can you just give us a kind of high level summary of what a health trust is and how is it different to private medical insurance?
So one of the fundamental differences between private medical insurance and health trust is a health trust is not an insurance. Health trust is a product that is owned by the company, provides more flexibility. Traditionally, there are different types of health trusts at the moment, but what it allows the client to do is design their own benefits, make the medical work for their employees and their workforce. There are some tax savings in there and it is a tax efficient vehicle. However, the primary reason for having it is to create your own bespoke medical plan for your employees.
So when you say it's not insurance, what does that mean? Does that mean the employer is kind of bearing the liability for all of the treatment costs?
So traditionally, when trusts were first set up, it would be exactly that. The employer would be liable for all costs of claims. However, now there are caps on those liabilities. And so you can take out an additional insurance to cover your maximum liability. If you have a threshold that you do not wish to go over, you can purchase aggregate stop loss or general stop loss, which will cap the amount a company is liable to pay.
So it sounds like it's kind of like an employer-funded healthcare benefit scheme, but you can put a safety net around it so that would prevent costs going beyond a certain threshold.
You can. Everyone has a budget. And let's face it, with spiraling costs of treatment, spiraling costs of medical plans, full stop. There aren't many companies out there with that deeper pockets these days. You are able to buy two types of insurance to protect the company and liabilities. The general aggregate stop loss, which is an overall limit, or a specific stop loss, which will cap any particular high claims. Traditionally, it used to be about £50,000. Is the cost of that insurance versus how much it's going to be used really going to work these days with the cost of treatment? We are seeing those increase ever so slightly. But what it does do is mean if you do have a large claim, like a cancer claim, a cardiovascular claim, that really can go into the hundreds of thousands, then you can put a protection on them. What happens then is once you hit that cap, say at £50,000, the insurance then takes over and it's no longer the employer's liability.
Okay. And is this a, if employers haven't heard of this before, if they haven't heard of a health trust before, is it a fairly simple market, a fairly simple proposition, or are there different types of health trusts that they would need to think about?
There are different types of health trusts and they will suit different companies. So you have your traditional private medical insurance, fully insured, you know what you're paying and you pay tax on top. With your trust vehicles, you've got a couple of options. So you can either go down the trust hybrid route, master trust, corporate excess, corporate deductible. These are actually owned by the administrators, otherwise known as the insurers, but under trust, they're known as the administrators. They will deal with all the legal side of things. They will have all the paperwork in place. They deal with the bank accounts. And so it takes a lot of the administrative and legal burden away from companies themselves. However, they're not quite as flexible with the benefits as they would typically be under a bespoke trust. So under a bespoke trust, it is the company's trust. They will need their own trustees. They will need their own trust documents. They will need legal advice to set it up. However, once that initial outlay is gone, apart from reviewing it on occasion every few years, just making sure the trustees is completely accurate, making sure the benefits are very, very clear in them and clearly defined, they own that and they are able then to put their own bespoke benefits in. So we've had some clients put in a type of cash plan benefit, not something you traditionally see in private medical insurance. Maybe increase the chronic cover, put in some specialist cover if they're in a specialist industry. So there's a lot more flexibility with that bespoke option, but there are different options and they're not as difficult as they look. If you've got the right advice and you have the time to plan it out, it's really not as hard as it can sometimes feel.
Sharon, you mentioned a couple of points there as to why an employer might put a trust in place, benefit design, tax savings. Is there any other reasons that an employer might consider a trust as opposed to private medical insurance?
To be honest, it's mainly about owning the benefit and providing that flexibility. It, as I said before, it is a tax efficient vehicle. However, that is no reason to move to a trust at all. That would potentially be considered tax avoidance. And yeah, so there needs to be a very clear reason to move to a trust. And that is traditionally the benefit levels, what types of benefits that can be put in, and the ownership of the benefit themselves. So they're able to really design things to suit their own particular workforce. Those are the main reasons for putting one in.
Yeah. And if a client's considering this for the first time, because that's what we're seeing at the moment, certainly with our in our client bank. So insured clients now considering trust for the first time, what are the main considerations?
So what you don't want to do is set up a healthcare trust and your claims are through the roof. If your claims at the moment are not stable, if not necessarily the high claims, we may be able to work around those. But if you've got a fluctuating claiming trend, trust may not be right at that time. What you need to do is really look at why. What's going on with your scheme at the moment and how can we stabilise that? And we would work with you to make sure that scheme was then, as much as we possibly can, stabilised, and it could potentially take a few years. At that point, once it's stabilised, you can then look to potentially put in a healthcare trust. But before you do anything like that, we always recommend a trust feasibility study. And what that does is look at the impact of potentially implementing a trust. Are your liabilities potentially going to be a lot higher? Is it even viable at the moment? Are you opening up a can of worms potentially? So we would work with you. A trust feasibility is then put in place just to outline to you potential liabilities. What would have happened last year if you were on a trust? So everything is very, very clear. Our clients need to ensure that they truly understand what they're moving to, but they've got to make sure they've got sustainability in their claims fund. They need to make sure they've got the personnel to be able to put trustees together. They need to make sure they have the initial appetite for the legal outlay that they're going to need to set up a bespoke trust if that's the route. But these are all things that we explore during the feasibility, and we have a very open and honest conversation with clients. One thing we do not recommend is a trust if it's not going to work for the client.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've mentioned a few things there to consider when you are setting up your trust. I mean, typically, how long are we talking about to set up a trust? And again, you mentioned there's the master trust, the standalone trust, the co. You know, how long are we talking here to set this up?
That's a great question. How long's a piece of string? No. It can be as complex or as simple as you want it to be. And typically, what we say is a master trust, if you've got a 3-month lead-in time, ideally, 3 to 6 months, perhaps even a bit, a little bit longer, but say up to 6 months for a bespoke trust. And that's all the legalities, putting the trustees in place, trustee rules. There are a lot of factors to take into consideration, and also checking your documentation, making sure that aligns with the new trust rules that you've got in place.
Right. Okay. So it's, I guess it's about pre-planning into our renewal conversations and factoring those timelines in if we're going to be moving to a trust. I mean, what are some of the preconceived ideas that maybe prevent some clients considering trusts?
That there's no cap on liabilities, that it's actually extremely expensive and leaves the company exposed. It doesn't, unless you wish it to. In which case, yeah, we can absolutely do that for you. I'm sure no administrator would have a problem with that. However, there are various mechanisms we can put in place. You can still put your benefit limits in. It doesn't mean it's a free-for-all. You can't just claim for everything. The benefit will work for the budget and the appetite of the company and what the company requires for its employees, as I've mentioned before.
And Sharon, I mean, we've mentioned some of the great things that master trusts and standalone trusts and different type of arrangements such as these can offer clients. What are some of the pitfalls that we really do need to consider?
So there's some very common mistakes. And that is, firstly, from the very beginning, understanding the difference between a master trust and a bespoke trust. Unfortunately, with the explosion of master trusts, or should I actually call them trust hybrids, because they are called different things by different administrators, is not appreciating that actually a bespoke trust is not a master trust. The administrator is not doing the documentation for you. You must have clear guidelines in place. You need that bank account set up. But the most common mistake on any trust that we see is not looking at your internal documentation. I mentioned earlier that this is not an insurance. You cannot imply it's an insurance in your contracts, in employee communications, or anything else. It's got to be very clear that this is a plan. This is not an insurance. It's a tax-efficient vehicle. And for HMRC purposes, we need to make sure it's registered, and we need to make sure the internal documentation aligns to the fact that this is not an insurance. That is probably the biggest mistake that we see. And actually, it's fairly easy rectified, and we help our clients all the time with these things. They're not as nightmarish as they sound, I promise.
So thanks for that, Sharon. I wonder if we could just take it back a couple of steps. I was thinking about a comment you made earlier around trusts not being a suitable vehicle for clients who have got very volatile claims or claims that are fluctuating year on year. Is there anything else, any other sort of parameters that might suggest a client who is ideal for thinking about health trusts? Accepting there'll always be exceptions and outliers, but you know, what's the sort of the ideal type of client to start thinking about a health trust?
Absolutely, there are definitely preferable parameters. Now, these are parameters. There are occasions where we may go outside of these for very specific reasons. Each case is unique and individual, and we'll review it on its own merit. Ideally, your larger companies will have a trust in place. It works. As you start to go above 500 employees covered or £500,000 in premium, that's when we start to look at those trust vehicles. And the reason being, where you start to bespoke some of those benefits, there's enough of a fund to absorb some fluctuation in claiming patterns.
So when we talk about the 500 staff or the £500,000 sort of premium spend, we're not saying that a trust wouldn't work below that size. We're saying that's the size where you start to see more stable year-on-year claims performance, maybe a bit more predictability in the claims experience year-on-year, which, given it in the first instance, the employer is responsible, is taking on the liability for those claims costs, that can give a little bit more stability in those funding obligations.
Absolutely. We do find that smaller schemes and They are more volatile, especially at the moment where we are seeing changing claiming patterns. We're seeing instance rates rise. It's really important that there is a stable foundation. Having a larger fund, so claims fund, the pot of money that's designed to be paid out on claims, the larger that is, typically, the more stable we can help create that plan or that scheme to be by putting effective management tools in place. Unfortunately, for the smaller schemes, you can have a cancer claim. Let's face it, we're seeing cancer claims go above 100,000. More and more, we're seeing cardiovascular claims come in at £50,000, £60,000 of spend. If you've only got £100,000 worth of claims fund, actually, is that going to be sufficient to prevent the fluctuations in premiums? What we need to do initially is work with you to stabilise it, whether you're too small and we need to look at how you can potentially expand the membership for the trust to become viable, or if your claims are just far too erratic, fluctuating too much, then we need to work with you to stabilise those claims. And those are the two key factors to make sure that a trust is successful in the longer term.
And I guess if you do have one of those smaller claims funds, but you're keen on a trust for other reasons, maybe the, as you said, the ability to really bespoke your benefit design, you can put in place some of those protections to cap your liability, but the insurer underwriting that protection will probably charge more for it because it's protection on a relatively smaller claims fund.
Absolutely, yes. If you have a full insurance, private medical insurance, you can put some of those stop loss insurances in place to help manage your liabilities, cap the fluctuations at renewals. Sorry, I say manage liabilities, that's the trust hat on. Obviously, for the full insurance, liabilities are capped at the premium. But what you can do is start managing those claims by implementing one of the stop loss insurances. But as you say, Brett, it is a lot more expensive potentially to put those in place and isn't necessarily viable. Sometimes the protection that they provide, actually the cost outweighs that protection. Right. But again, it's something that can be explored.
And when we talk about bespoking benefits, and Emily, I know you've seen this with some of your clients, are there particular areas of benefit design where maybe client interest has moved faster than insurers have been able to respond on their traditional insurance products, and where trusts can give employers a little bit more agility, a little bit more speed of response in terms of responding to those changing expectations from employees? And Emily, I'd welcome your thoughts on this as well, as I say, I know some of your clients are in this position.
No, absolutely. There are definitely some trends. Historically, it's been more about chronic cover for chronic conditions, providing more than just a small pot of money, actually providing something more defined so that employees are able to go and get treatment and seek help, especially with NHS waiting lists increasing, being able to go and get that help when it's not an acute flare-up. So that's traditionally and now remains one of the top things that clients would like to change and implement. The other thing that we're seeing now, and it can be done on full insurance, but it's a lot easier under trust, is tiering benefits, providing some kind of benefit for employees that wouldn't normally have cover. So things like implementing some kind of cashback benefit for those that maybe don't have access at the moment, more diagnostic, tiering the benefits so that actually the trust works for the demographic of employee that they've got. I don't know if you're seeing some of that or any other changes, Emily, on your ones, but typically those are the ones that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for some of mine who have a US influence, we're certainly seeing benefits around things like gender dysphoria, absolutely, fertility, and coverage that you just simply can't necessarily get in the insured market. Whereas moving into the trust market, there is that flexibility and to design it to the wider business group. So absolutely, it offers that flexibility. And I think we are seeing a changing landscape in terms of health benefits.
Absolutely. And it's really important to say as well, as much as you can bespoke your benefits, it's not a benefit free for all. You can't just do anything. That are the guidance, there are parameters. So it's not a case of, I feel like putting XYZ in. You can't necessarily just do that straight away. And actually, we will always take you through any kind of bespoking. You need to look at future impact. What are the wider implications? And those are really important when you are bespoking benefits.
Absolutely.
That last part may surprise listeners. An employer may sit there and think, well, actually, if I'm funding this, I haven't bought a traditional insurance product, I've set up a health trust, so I've got the liability for funding these healthcare costs. Why can't I decide what I do and don't want to pay for almost on a claim by claim basis? What prevents employers from doing that?
So we need to look at the wider impact of new benefits. Who is it accessible to? Is it fair? Can the insurer manage it? Is the due diligence there to make sure that this benefit is safe for employees? There are various factors that need to be put in place. Are there wider implications? Could it be that if we fund up to XYZ, we're leaving our employees exposed after that time? You can put a lot of benefits in place, and there's probably a solution for every problem out there. But what we must do, and what is really crucial, and again, goes back to the point of some of the frequent mistakes that we see, is what impact could that have moving forward? What impact, if we've put a cap in place for a particular benefit, could that have on an employee that's going through a particular course of treatment and then get stopped? Can they go back to the NHS? Is it an NHS postcode lottery? Those factors must be taken into place, and the due diligence and regulations around the individual benefits must be in place with the administrator.
But then if I'm the employer and I've designed my benefits and I've launched my trust, and then an employee, very valued employee, maybe a senior employee, tries to claim for something that isn't covered within the benefit design but I've put in place, but they are a valued employee, they are a senior stakeholder in the business. If it's my trust, if I'm the employer that's funding the costs, why can I just not decide on an ad hoc basis to pay for treatments that go outside of the benefits I've designed?
So HMRC are very, very clear that the benefits must be very clearly stated. There must be rules around them, and clarity must be provided to the trustees. A trust is not discretionary. It is a non-discretionary trust. And you must adhere to the rules that are put in place. If you do not, the potential is that that particular member's treatment or employee's treatment could become ex gratia, and not just the bit that wasn't technically covered by the trust. The whole treatment could potentially be classed as an ex gratia, and they would be taxed on it. So there are a lot of rules around it to make sure that everyone is protected, but the HMRC rules are very clear.
So when you say they would be taxed on it, the employee would be taxed on the cost of the treatment. What is a P11D tax?
Yes, it would be.
Which would be an unwelcome surprise when they get their P11D statement, I suspect.
Potentially, it could be a very unwelcome surprise, especially when you consider typically the treatment that's not covered is typically more expensive. And there can be some potential experimental drugs. Those are the kind of things that we've seen happen before. None of that is cheap. And having a tax bill land on your desk is definitely not going to be a good day.
Yeah, definitely. Emily, what else are you seeing from your clients that might have a bearing on this? Are there any other reasons that clients are thinking about trusts? Are you seeing interest grow in trusts in general, and what's driving that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sharon's mentioned a couple of points early in terms of benefit design and obviously tax efficiencies, and we can't, you know, avoid that. We're seeing the increase in premiums across, you know, the market at the moment, and that's simply where we see an increase in incident levels and usage on the plan. So we now are needing to think further forward than just the, you know, the 2-3 year plan. This is 5-10 year plan. Where are we going to be, you know, in 5 years, where are we going to be in 10 years? So when we talk about benefit design, that's really important, future-proofing the scheme. And ultimately, financially, we've got to think about increasing premiums, but also how does that impact the business as well? So absolutely, more and more conversations are being had. So I think this is really valuable. So, you know, certainly thank you, Sharon, for producing the document. It certainly helped me and my clients, have to say.
No problem at all. And just one last thing I was going to say that's really important. Not everything is about the trust. Don't forget your other benefits. Work. There's a way and a means that everything doesn't need to go under the health side of things. Looking at your entire package and using everything efficiently is the key initial step.
So, well, yeah, interesting. And then, so Emily, as you said there, if you're a client who's had some premium shocks of late, and we know many have, This isn't about thinking about a health trust as a short-term way to bank some tax efficiencies in the next year or two. This is about getting a hand on the reins of your benefits and really being able to design a benefit structure that is tailored to the needs of your employees and which maybe targets and contains some of those drivers of claims inflation, to really drive out some sustainability in your healthcare funding over the next 5 to 10 years. This isn't a short-term strategy. This is a long-term strategy clients need to think about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, well, I mean, thanks both of you for talking us through all of that. It's really fascinating. I think with everything that's been said and with all of the drivers pushing clients to think about this, maybe sometimes for the first time, do we think interest growth in healthcare trust is going to continue? I think today they already account for around a third of the company funded healthcare market. Is that going to continue to grow, and if so, what do we see driving that continued interest?
Absolutely, and there's going to be a number of factors driving it. The tax efficiency is always going to be there. The changing need of the workforce, the changing health needs since the pandemic as well, what employees require is always changing, and a trust vehicle is a great way to be able to make sure your benefit works for your employees.
Emily, anything to add to that?
Absolutely. Just thinking about the future strategies, what do you want to achieve from your health provisions and your well-being plan, and trust are a fundamental part of that decision-making process.
Absolutely.
Well, look, thanks both. Appreciate your time this morning. That's been fascinating. Hopefully our listeners found it fascinating too. I'm sure they did. Look forward to joining us again on a future broadcast. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it.
Thanks, Sharon. Cheers, guys.